This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts. Neil Conan is on vacation. If you're wondering what it takes to be a man these days, writes Laura Session Stepp, just check out Johnny Depp's wrist. In the latest Pirates of the Caribbean movie, his Captain Jack Sparrow wears a bit of white lace just above his left hand, a touch of his feminine side, or, as Depp tells us, a trophy from a young woman. Stepp, who writes for the Washington Post, puts it more bluntly. Is it swish or swagger? That's the question facing many guys these days, as more women take on roles that are generally considered masculine. What it means to be a man and to be manly isn't always clear, and the images we see in pop culture can confuse things even more. Guys, let us know. What does it mean to be manly? Is it clear to you? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can comment on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. But first, Laura Session Stepp is with us. She's a staff writer at The Washington Post and author of the book Unhooked. Last month, she wrote an article called What Does It Mean to Be Manly? Laura, welcome back to the show.
Thanks very much.
So why do you think men have to choose between swish and swagger?
I think they feel like they have to choose. I'm not sure they do, but you know, their traditional role was the swagger, was the what we used to call the bubbas, the beer drinking, beer guzzling, good old boys. And now they're seeing men dressed up in frills and acting lovingly, and it, you know, there's a certain population out there that finds that a little hard to know how they're supposed to act.
Well, there's also the upper class version of the bubba that's, you know, maybe wearing a business suit instead of overalls, but is still just as swaggering and just as unlikely to show a feminine side.
That's true. And what we're seeing is a change in the habits of those upper middle class people in suits. I mean, Donna St. George had a story in the paper this past Sunday about the sharing of household tasks in a marriage. And men and women rate that now very highly. More than two-thirds of them say that is one of the most important things in a marriage. Well, 20 years ago, you would not have had men saying that in the same proportion as you did women, because housework was considered women's work, and now it's considered among the certain class of people, particularly, I think, considered a couple's work.
We referred to the Johnny Depp character in Pirates of the Caribbean in the introduction. Do you think he is, to some degree, representative of a cultural trend? Do you think that, you know, he is a role model in any way?
Well, I chose him because he was coming out that weekend on the film.
And I saw lace
around his wrist, and I thought, that could be one of two things. Of course, I had then readers write in and say, well, men of that era have always worn lace around their wrists. And I was saying, oh, you're getting way too picky for me. But, you know, you had in your promo Bruce Willis, you know, the real I'm going to kill this guy kind of guy. But we do look to movies and pop culture for symbols. I just over the weekend resaw the movie Hitch with Will Smith and his
sidekick. Yeah, it was on cable. I resaw it too.
Yeah. And, I mean, his sidekick, Kevin James, who plays this big old fat guy in love with this tax heiress who's gorgeous, and his name, you know, Albert, is just incredibly in love with this woman, and he and Hitch, Will Smith, tries to get him to act very manly and do sort of, you know, ignore her phone calls and do this sort of traditional man thing. He finally sort of says screw that, and he goes out and he acts like he loves her, and she loves that. And so in the end, the sort of, if you will, the swish of the two prevail.
Do you think these trends are cyclical to some degree? I mean, wasn't there the 70s sensitive guy?
There was, and I think that sensitive guy has sort of come in. They're probably the ones answering the Pew Research survey on household tasks. but I do think there are some, you know, seriously, there's some sort of social changes that, you know, we need to keep in mind. One of the economic shifts. I mean, there are, in fact, many more white-collar jobs now than blue-collar jobs. And white-collar professionals tended to be, and of course you always run the risk of overgeneralizing, but tended to be more of what I would call the swish and less of the swagger. So I think, and women came on board saying, okay, we've got jobs, we're working, we have kids, we want you to, you know, one, either stay home and help me raise the kids, or two, at least share the job in the household. And so you see that kind of social demographic change has also affected, I think, the way men see themselves.
And so being a hands-on dad or being able to cook a gourmet dinner becomes actually a manly attribute.
Right, and seeing your father do that. I mean, for young men today, I mean, I have a son who's 23, and he would think nothing of running, you know, his father cooked, thank goodness, and he would think nothing of cooking. He thinks nothing of throwing on a shirt that has some frill to it. I can't imagine my boyfriend in high school ever wearing frills. So I think dress and fashion have changed some. And I also think, and you referred briefly to my book on Hooked, what I found in that book, which looks at hooking up and dating and how those things have changed, is that young men wrote me afterwards saying, the hooking up hurts us as much as it hurts young women. We look like we want to come on to women, but really in our hearts, we really just want to be in love. And that's pretty swishy.
Let's hear from Stephen in Cincinnati. Stephen, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure. You're on the air.
Yeah, well, I guess, you're asking, definitions of manliness. For me, it's something that I think a lot of men in American culture are getting away from, which is work. You know, I do a white-collar job, so it doesn't have to be, get your hands on something, do manly work. But I think what you see happening now that women are making, often 50% or more of the household income, men feel like that, their priority is on leisure more than work. And I think that's manly to me, going out and putting in your good, solid day's worth of work every day, regardless of whether you need to or not. I think that kind of shapes a man, regardless of, his femininity or masculinity and his behavior patterns. It's that work thing. It's a man's job to go out and work.
Work to provide for the other people in his family or to earn self-worth or all of the above?
I think more in sense of self-worth. I think a sense of manliness comes from going out and putting that hard day's work. Again, with women taking a more active role in our society and being the income generator, it's not as, I don't think it's required or is necessary for him to be the primary breadwinner, but I still think it's important to go in and put that day's worth of man work in, whether it's white collar, blue collar, whatever.
Stephen, thanks for your call. Let's hear from Derek in Ashland, Oregon. Derek, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi. To follow up on Stephen's call there, I'm actually blue collar. I work in the construction trades, but I carry a purse around. It's a little more square, so I guess it could look sort of camera baggish. But people, when I say I need to grab my purse, they say, oh, that's your man purse. And I object to that because I don't have a problem just calling it my purse.
So you're not looking for an attaché case euphemism here. You're calling it a purse.
Yeah, and I think that was a Seinfeld reference to call it
right.
The man purse. It's European. But I just call it my purse, and I'm happy with that. And perhaps it's because I grew up with a single mother raising three boys and running a daycare out of our home. And I don't know, I don't run into too many construction workers carrying purses around, but there's at least one.
Derek, thank you for your call. And Laura Sessions-Stepp, I wanted to talk to you in order to set up this issue, but I got to tell you, you and me talking about manliness is not really, where we need to stay here. I think we need to talk to some men, so I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, thanks so much.
Laura Sessions-Stepp is a staff writer for The Washington Post. She joined us from their studio here in Washington. So we would like to bring this conversation on to about what it means to be manly with some male voices. Chris Wilson is deputy editor at the men's magazine Maxim, and he joins us from our New York bureau. Chris Wilson, welcome.
Thank you.
Do you agree with what Laura Sessions-Stepp was saying? Do you think it's harder to pinpoint what being manly is?
I could definitely see a blurring of the lines. I mean, I think it's interesting that the biggest you know, action star of this decade, maybe Orlando Bloom.
Who's a pretty boy.
He's a rather bland pretty boy, but who happens to be in, you know, the Lord of the Rings movies, the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, Kingdom of Heaven. He keeps getting cast in all these sort of epically manly movies, and he's, you know, really anything but what you consider to be the macho male archetype. I mean, he's a long way away from Schwarzenegger or Stallone or Chuck Norris or the action movie stars we had back in the 80s, that's for sure.
Do you think these trends move in cycles? Do you think that there's sort of an emphasis on more traditionally feminine attributes and then it backlashes to a more macho image?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's always undercurrents of it. I mean, you know, look at Joe Namath in the 70s. He was the epitome of the macho guy, but he also wore frilly shirts and full-length mink jackets. I mean, it just depends if you can pull it off or not. In a way, it's even more manly if you can sort of dress like a fop or a dandy and get away with it.
So at a magazine like Maxim, which, you know, sometimes with the sort of scantily clad women could be seen as a sort of retro sort of manliness, what do you change to appeal to an audience as the audience changes?
Well, I think at Maxim we've become more sophisticated, especially over the last year or two. We've become a lot more service-oriented. I mean, it's not enough just to have pictures of beautiful women on your pages. You have to have sort of a lifestyle guide. You know, it's sort of, you know, we like to talk about the entourage generation. We're sort of servicing guys who are living that lifestyle, who are going to the clubs or buying the bottles. Or
you
buying
mean the HBO show Entourage.
Exactly. You know, and that really is a branded lifestyle. You know, guys are living like that nowadays. Guys are there's a lot of money to be made, especially on Wall Street, you know, especially in New York and L.A. Guys are going out, spending $400 on the vodka bottle, you know, buying the new car, buying, you know, the diesel jeans, you know, the right sneakers. You know, whether they like to admit it or not, guys do care how they look. And I think even Maxim has to reflect those sorts of changes.
Chris Wilson is deputy editor at the men's magazine Maxim. We're talking about what it means to be manly these days. One of the editors of the Washington Post series Being a Black Man joins us in a few minutes. And more of your calls at 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email, talk@npr.org. I'm Rebecca Roberts. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington. We're talking about what it means to be a man, how you define manly, and if it's really clear. Would especially like to hear from the men in our audience, 800-989-TALK, or email talk@npr.org, or send us a comment on our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. Chris Wilson is with us. He's deputy editor at Maxim magazine. And Chris, you were talking about the HBO show Entourage as a lifestyle in terms of spending a lot of money at clubs and buying sort of expensive status objects. But one of the other things that often comes up in reviews of that show is the male friendships and how it delves into male relationships in a way that a show like Sex and the City did for female relationships. Do you think there's an accurate representation of relationships among men in shows like that?
To a degree. I mean, certainly guys tend to travel in packs. But I've yet to meet a bunch of guys in their early 30s who live together, you know. It's like they're at Boy Scout camp. It's an interesting – especially if one of them is actually a movie star. I think he would, you know, make Turtle move into the pool house in real life or something. That does seem to strain credulity a bit. But
Well, also it seems like there's a sense that that sort of camaraderie is something you outgrow.
Yeah, I mean, I think it maybe speaks to the boy in all of us, you know. It's sort of it's like these guys are on an extended summer camp, and let's face it, you know, the more likely scenario is maybe some guys getting together on weekends or once every couple weeks if they have kids, and they can maybe hit the clubs and have some fun. But it's not this nonstop slumber party that's going on like on Entourage. But, you know, it certainly looks fun, that's for sure.
Well, another scene sort of similar to that, only with less cash, is the movie Knocked Up, the Judd Apatow movie, where there's this group of guys that seems to live together and has a whole, you know, parcel of inside jokes and has these longstanding friendships. And that very definitely, there's a sense that when the main character sort of gets a life and grows up, that those friendships are no longer important.
Right. And And as we all know, that does happen. I mean, ask any guy who gets married and has a child, and it's a lot harder to hang out with your old buddies every weekend like you used to. I mean, and yes, I do agree. Knocked Up, by the way, is a brilliant movie. And it's probably a lot more realistic than Entourage and its portrayal of guys hanging out together, especially guys, in their 20s who maybe haven't struck it rich yet.
Do you think that people look to leading men in popular culture for some sort of sense of, judging their own priorities against something that might be popular to others?
I think maybe if that happens at all, guys, I think today are looking at more someone like an everyman, like a Vince Vaughn or a Will Ferrell, is sort of, I think those are the new alpha males, I think comedies are just as strong as they've ever been. The action movies may not stack up to the action movies of the 80s or the 90s even, but I think the comedies that are coming out, Old School and Knocked Up and, Anchorman and Dodgeball and all these movies and Borat, are just as good as Fast Times and Stripes and all the old, Trading Places, the 80s classics. And I think these are that tells us more about what it is to be a guy, or maybe what it is about our culture today. It's more of a sense of irony and intelligence than a Cold War era action movie a la Rambo or the first Die Hard.
Well, that would sort of argue the, it's the almost a cliche that women are looking for a smart guy with a sense of humor. Would that to some degree indicate that men are coming around to being what women say they want?
I think, I think that's what every guy wants to believe, number one. And certainly someone like a Vince Vaughn or a Will Ferrell seems like someone you could be like in real life rather than an Orlando Bloom, for instance. So I think guys maybe are the strength of those comedies, the reason why they do so well is they're non-threatening to men and women. And they also find them funny, obviously. I don't want to get too analytical about it. I mean, I think the strength of them is that they are funny movies. But if you wanted to look deeper, maybe there's something there.
Let's hear from Alan in Arkansas. Alan, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hello.
Hello.
Now, I'm a line haul truck driver.
It sounds like you're in your truck right now.
Yeah. I was born in the 60s. In a military family, so it was, there was no male-female in our house. It was everybody was a soldier, and you cleaned the house. It didn't matter, what sex you were. All my boyhood heroes are all mostly gone. Clint Eastwood, John Wayne, Haas, Little John. I find that after the 80s, the 90s came around, it wasn't okay to be a man for some reason. And after 9/11, all of a sudden, it was okay to be a man again, and I lay a lot of this at the feet of the World Organization of Women, but now I think a lot of guys are just confused in general. To me, being a man is just taking care of business, taking care of your family, helping raise your kids. I mean, I'll drive 3,300 miles a week coast to coast every week for about 6 to 8 weeks out. I get home, I help do the dishes, do yard work, help the kids with the homework, anything I can to help make it easier on my partner. And I'm sure she's grateful. I give her, if they go away, I'll take care of the kids. You get a couple of days off. I don't see any conflict in doing dishes and being a man. I don't understand. I understand the macho end of it from other guys, but to me it seems kind of silly to be like that.
Alan, thanks for your call. Chris, what do you make of that idea that the sort of celebrated heroism of firefighters and police in 9/11 re-emphasized a more traditional masculinity?
There could be some truth to that. I don't think that was ever in any doubt. I don't think anyone ever didn't think that the heroism of cops and firefighters were something to be admired and, something to be elevated. And certainly those virtues have been elevated, only more since 9/11. I would say that I don't know how many guys think it's refuse to wash the dishes these days, especially if they live with their girlfriend or have a wife. That seems to be perhaps an antiquated idea there. I think, that's something that I guess if you don't mind sleeping on the couch, that's okay. But
right. Maybe fewer men refuse to wash the dishes because fewer women will stand for it.
Exactly.
Let's hear from Eric in Palo Alto. Eric, welcome to Talk the Nation.
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, so I actually wanted to point out something that I think is a sort of structural difficulty in this discussion that reflects the difficulty in the discussion in the country. So what we had here was two women talking about what it meant to be a man and setting the even setting the vocabulary of the debate of this sort of swagger versus swishy, which may not even be a opposition at all, and then sort of the men joining in and trying to make sense of it. And that seems to be, at least since the 70s, what's happened is that women were able to come together and define a new notion of femininity, and then men had to react to that. But men haven't really, sort of all the attempts of men to come together and define that themselves haven't really worked. And even this discussion also, you see the discussion from the outside looking in. There's no inside looking out discussion here. It's all looking at film and books and, you know, a couple personal anecdotes. But if you look at the professionals on the panel, it's all about film and books and media. There's nothing that's from the inside looking out. You know, this is my experience of masculinity.
And Eric, why do you think there's not more of a conversation about that among men?
So I don't know. I mean, you can go all the way nurture on it, that just men were never raised to discuss their emotions and to discuss them with each other, or you can go all the way nature on it and say that's just one of the ways we're more like chimpanzees than bonobos. I honestly don't know, but I do know it's a phenomenon, and I think it ultimately does limit the choices men have. I mean, I think at this point, you know, anything someone with two X chromosomes wants to do, they just go do it and say that, hey, that's my interpretation of femininity. It's not quite the case for men.
Yeah, it's true. When we were talking about guests for this show, I said that if it were Neil, not on vacation, and he was talking to a man about what it meant to be a woman, it would tick me off.
Yeah, the problem is I'm disturbed that I'm not ticked off about it. Because I really ought to be, and I went through a time in my 20s when I really was ticked off about it. I think that now I've just come to accept that's the way this debate works in this country, or the way this discussion works.
Eric, thank you so much for your call. I'd like to bring Kevin Merida into this conversation. He spent a lot of time thinking about what it means to be a man for the Washington Post series, Being a Black Man. He's associate editor at the Post, and he joins us from the Washington Post studios here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back to Talk of the Nation.
Glad to be here.
Do you think there are differences among race when we're talking about these questions of what it means to be a man?
Well, I do, and I think part of that is how society looks at men, how others look at us, and whether the us is white men or Hispanic men or Asian men. We did a series that's about to become a book called Being a Black Man. We looked at black men. One of the reasons we did it was because, you know, we felt that black men in some sense occupied a kind of special place in society. They were really in several niches, one of which is the menacing black man, which I think is a popular image that comes by way of your newscast, your nightly newscast on television with the number of crime stories. And you see black men in menacing situations. And I think that there also is kind of the, you know, for lack of a better word, the good black man, which would be personified by a Colin Powell or someone who's achieved something extraordinary. And then, of course, there are those who entertain us, the athletes like Michael Jordan and others. And so, you know, those types kind of set in the public's mind. And I think for black men, our series focused the gentleman right before me was talking about looking from the inside out. We really did a series that had black men speaking for themselves, and you got to hear their voice and see them in all their complexity. So you had people like Howard Key, who was a NASA scientist, but wears dreadlocks, somebody who might not necessarily conjure up the image of a NASA engineer, a rocket scientist, but he likes to sail on his spare time. and you know he's into martial arts. We profiled a thug, you know, and really got to look at him in some different dimensions. Got to see how that he was really a very smart guy, had gone off the tracks, but had once been an honor student in seventh grade before he became a criminal and thought a lot about issues. So I think that in many respects that race is a defining feature of men. I think that there are that's seen in a number of times where you might spot someone and you feel a little more threatened by them because of their skin color, the way they look at you. And so I guess I agree with that statement, yeah.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We have a comment on our blog from Thomas who says, I think what we see happening these days is that the media is starting to reveal the complexities of the male psyche. Real men aren't the one-dimensional testosterone-laden machines that they're often portrayed to be. Men are multidimensional creatures, and a single one-size-fits-all definition of manliness doesn't really fit. Chris Wilson, would you agree with that, that there's starting to be at least more nuanced coverage of what it means to be a man?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, especially if we're going back again to, you know, images in pop culture, particularly in movies. You know, I don't think that the Mount Rushmore of action heroes would fly these days, the Schwarzenegger, Stallone, you know, Mel Gibson in his prime guys. I mean, they would be laughed off the screen. You really have to be more self-deprecating and have a sense of irony for an audience to engage you and take you seriously or be with you at least.
Let's hear from Vinny in Waterford, Michigan. Vinny, welcome to Talk the Nation.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, I was commenting. I'm 5'11", 195 pounds, muscular build. I'm a pastry chef, and I also design women's evening gowns and dresses. And when I say that to my friends, their eyes pop open and their jaw hits the floor, you know, and they go, "Wow, we never expect something like that from you," you know, and. Yesterday, my girlfriend and I were looking through Victoria's Secrets, and I was like, "Well, I wouldn't have designed that that way, and I would, you know, I'd do this to that." And her son started laughing and said, "Vinny, you sound like you ought to be gay," you know. And I was just, we just laughed about it because, you know, I guess I don't look like the type of person who would or male that would be, you know, interested in women's fashions, but you know. It's something that I enjoy doing, and I think you know, the macho man and everything is fine, and you know, I mean, I look like that sometimes, you know, but then there's that side of me that enjoys fashion, you know.
Vinny, thanks for your call. Kevin Merida, what we haven't talked about at all is this sort of undercurrent of homophobia, that if you know, men are confused about what it means to be masculine, that one of the reasons they may not push that envelope is because they're worried about being called gay.
Yeah, I think that you're right about that, and I think there are a lot of images. I mean, we sell toughness. I mean, that's always been a type that we sell. We've done it through movies, and we do it in commercials, and certainly there's a lot of peer pressure to be tough. I know particularly in black communities, a lot of kids feel, just growing up, to feel the need to, you know, to not be disrespected. That's a big word, and that translates in ways that often are not very, you know, not very developing, you know. And I think, though, that a lot has changed over time. I think that men are a lot more comfortable. I think as you have more and more diverse experiences, as people travel abroad, as kids have more opportunities growing up to see different images, they become more comfortable in their own skin. And I think that's what really changes when you see people who are you know, willing, particularly people in public, whether they're willing to wear clothing that they didn't wear before. You see a lot now with the kind of shorts I see kids the young people wearing now with the paisley shorts and the very colorful, bright colored shirts. And, you know, Kanye West kind of popularized that a little bit with wearing pink shirts and the bright colors, things that during when I was growing up, people would have said, come on now, that's gay. And I think that you're seeing a little bit of an opening there, but it's still not where we need to be.
Kevin Merida is associate editor of The Washington Post. We're also joined by Chris Wilson, deputy editor at Maxim. We'll talk more about what it means to be a man when we come back. Plus, Washington, D.C. gets the green light to use tax dollars for needle exchange programs. We'll look at what that means for D.C. and programs in other cities. Stay with us. I'm Rebecca Roberts. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we're wrapping up our conversation about what it means to be manly. Our guests are Chris Wilson, deputy editor at Maxim Magazine, and Kevin Merida, associate editor for The Washington Post. And we had a question from an email from Larissa in San Francisco that I'm going to lift entirely because it's a good one. She says, your conversation has seemed to be centered around defining the urban male. What are the differences between rural and urban men in what they consider masculine? Chris Wilson, do you have any sense of that from your readership?
Boy, that's an interesting question. That is a good question. I mean, I think the principal tenets of being a man is probably shared by guys wherever they happen to live, to be honest. I'm not sure if there's a clear delineation just because you live, you know, on a farm in the South and the big city in the Midwest or something. I'm not sure, honestly. I don't know the answer to that.
Kevin Merida, do you have any sense of that?
Well, I think that, you know, in the sense that there may be not as many diversions and distractions, population not being as large, so maybe, you know, schools are not as big and, you know, the circle of playmates not as big for kids growing up. But I think that Chris is right that I think those lines of delineation are shrinking. I think they're not what they used to be because in a lot of rural America, you find kind of the suburbs have pushed out to rural America. And I think that there's a lot of lot more going on in rural America than once was.
Let's hear from Sam in Sacramento. Sam, welcome to Talk the Nation. Sam, you're on the air.
Yes. I have to agree that it's a gradual change. For example, from my father's generation to my generation, my father and I were born in Mexico, so my father was a very macho man, and myself spent enough time here. I came here when I was 7. I adapted, and now I consider myself an enlightened male. And case in point, when I used to go visit my dad, when I was first married, my wife said, Sam, it's time to go. And I got up, being an enlightened man that I was. But my father would right away make fun of me. He said, my God, you should be ashamed of yourself. Let the woman tell you what to do. And so it was a little bit uncomfortable, and you don't want to make a drastic change. So when I got home, I told my wife, look, from here on, I want you to do me a favor. If you want to leave, just give me a signal. And let me take it from there. Next time we go to my dad, my wife, being very understanding and both of us mutually enlightened, gave me the signal, and I got up and I said, Rosie, let's go home. made my father very proud, and at the same time, I didn't lose anything. So the change is gradual, and I think a lot of it is generational and definitely, in my case, cultural. My guy, my father, if somebody ever told him that his wife wore the pants in the family, he would be devastated. Although my mom trained my sisters by telling them, just make them think they're the boss.
Sam, thank you for your call. At the other end of that continuum, we've got email from Michael in Missouri who says, I immigrated 8 years ago from Europe and was totally unaware about the male-female roles in America. In Europe, behaving overly masculine is seen as a sign of education and social class, i.e. the more manly you behave, the dumber and lower class you are. So, you know, in some ways, maybe this is a sign of the globalization that these standards are getting blurry, across national lines. Chris Wilson?
Let me get this straight. The more manly you behave, the dumber you are?
According to Michael in Missouri, that overly masculine behavior is equated with being dumb and lower class in
right.
Europe.
Like if you're beating your chest or something, or lifting up rocks.
Groaning heavily, yeah.
I think there may be something to that. I'll buy that, sure.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us. Chris Wilson is deputy editor of Maxim, and Kevin Merritt is associate editor of The Washington Post. Thank you both
so much. Nice show, Rebecca.
Thank you.